And it is today's Topical Currents, Monday edition. It's our At Your Service pet program this hour. That's always a favorite of Bonnie's. She's quite an animal lover. She's had many, many cats.
Dogs, too.
Dogs and that. So, well, we'll discuss pet issues and, of course, take your calls. With us is veterinarian Dr. Ian Kupke. He heads the Sable Chase Animal Clinic in Kendall. Welcome to you, Dr. Oyce. Good to see you.
Good morning.
Good afternoon. Also with us is canine training and behavior specialist and cat training and cat behavior specialist, Adele Mieres. He runs Canine Advisors, and he'll take your dog and cat questions. Welcome to you.
Thank you for having me.
So I thought we'd start today, since we never seem to get to the subject before the show's end, and since healthcare and health insurance are so in the news these days, I'd like to begin with the issue of veterinary insurance, for our animals. When is it suggested and when is it not, or is it always suggested?
Insurance is becoming a growing field in veterinary medicine. The reason for that is because when your pet gets ill, you're presented with a bill, and it's often a big bill. So when to do the insurance? I would say at the point of your first puppy physical. The idea there is that you get a clean bill of health from the initial physical exam. That means that there are no pre-existing conditions. We'll go on to that in a moment.
Right.
And at that point, kicking off with most insurance companies, the premium's quite reasonable.
Is that paid monthly, or is it paid yearly?
You can do both. I choose to pay. I have pet insurance. I pay mine via credit card monthly, and you don't even notice it.
Now, that's strange that you have pet insurance.
Well, there are things within veterinary medicine that I am not qualified to treat. I do not do back surgery.
For example,
there's advanced procedures that involve 24-hour care where basically a specialist would be involved. So I could do with some help too. So basically, the things you need to look at when you're looking at an insurance provider is make sure that they don't play any games with breed-specific problems. What I mean by that is that each and every breed have associated with it certain problems that are linked to that breed.
Like dysplasia.
Right.
Dysplasia in large breed dogs, for example. Back problems with dachshunds. Ear problems with cocker spaniels. And some insurance companies, if you read the fine print, won't cover for those issues.
And that's
a problem for me. I think that if you're paying good money for a premium, you should be covered.
Roughly what it would cost a year if you insured a puppy after its first visit?
Well, looking at my experience, I have two dachshunds. Recently acquired a second dachshund. He's now 2 years old. That dog is costing me $30 a month with a $500 deductible. But what that means is that after $500, I get 90% of my veterinary costs reimbursed.
And that includes medications?
Medication, surgery, hospitalization, physiotherapy. Each insurance company has a slightly different profile of what they cover. And that's something else we should go on to. Generally, I find there are two types of insurance company. Those that are very generous with your routine wellness issues, vaccinations, dental care, and so forth. But they tend to be a little bit less generous with the major medical. I do not recommend those because, in a sense, what you're doing is you're buying something with a lot of window dressing, but when it gets down to the time you really need this product, they aren't there for you.
Like catastrophic care.
Exactly. From my mind, you're better off picking a policy that doesn't cover anything routine, doesn't cover vaccines, doesn't cover routine dental cleaning. These are modest expenses, but they'll be there for you for the bigger problems. So, and finally, insurance doesn't work the same way as it does in the human field in that most of the time you actually have to physically pay your bill and then you petition the insurance company for reimbursement.
Oh.
So it isn't like the human
So your office doesn't have to deal with an insurance company?
No.
We have to.
Periodically, we'll get people who call and say, oh, do you take this company? Do you take that company? And the bottom line is we take any company because the way it works is you pay your bill and then you petition the insurance company and we'll fill out whatever paperwork needs to be filled out to make that happen.
Let me just give the number out. We're here with your pet care questions.
At your service.
At your service. And we're going to be getting to a lot more than insurance. We just wanted to address that. The number is 1-800-743-9576, 1-800-743-9576. Or you can email radio@wlrn.org. So the pre-existing conditions?
Well, and that goes back to sometimes breed-relating disorders. Other times it's things that the puppy may not have obvious during that first physical exam, but develops later, and you discover that it is something that they were born with. Again, some insurance companies will try to avoid that claim. So you really need to dig and look at the reviews and basically make sure that the product you're getting is what you think you're getting.
Okay. So have we covered enough of that?
I think so. As always, you can email with any questions.
Okay. All right. And the emails are?
Mine is sablechasevet, sablechasevet @gmail.com.
And Adele, what's new on the behavioral front? He owns Canine
Advisors.
Canine Advisors.
On the behavioral front, regarding insurance, I can tell you this much. They do not cover it unless it's a veterinarian behaviorist, and they'll cover medications and some of the actual advice that veterinarian behaviorist may give. And that I only know from experience with current clients of mine, where they've tried to get some behavior work that I was doing with the dog covered. And as it turns out, they won't cover that. And I understand the majority of the insurances work that way, but perhaps Dr. Cook.
What about service dogs?
What about service dogs?
Would they be insured for behavioral instruction? I guess they come kind of prepackaged that they've been trained.
I don't know regarding service dogs if they're going to. I don't think that they determine whether a dog is a service dog, a police dog, a search and rescue dog. I think they just determine whether that behavior advice or any medication due to that behavior advice is coming from a veterinarian as opposed to a trainer.
Now, there's been some recent pit bull incidents. Could you discuss those? And I know you've worked with pit bulls for many years.
Yes, we have a wonderful little pit bull right now. That is a PTSD trained dog, and we're looking for a veteran or somebody with PTSD that would like to adopt this dog because their current owner is terminally ill. Mm. So I have worked many pit bulls, as I have many other breeds, for service dog work and for other work as well. I don't find that identifying a breed as being, let's say, dangerous or being more dangerous than any other breed is a responsible way of going about basically advertising any particular breed to the public.
Okay, so should we move on? The holidays are upon us. Let's look at the issue of pet gift
giving.
We
don't even have any calls on our at your service.
No, that's strange, especially when it comes to animal questions.
That number, 1-800-743-9576, 1-800-743-WLRN, email radio@wlrn.org.
Okay, so this holiday puppy kitty syndrome, or be it Easter bunnies, whatever the case, you definitely recommend no surprises and no gift giving of pets. Explain why.
Exactly. I actually have a brief funny story. When I was in my 20s, I lived in a house that was run by an elderly lady who basically cooked and cleaned. And it was a nice, cheap way for a 20-something guy to survive without having to cook. But she was widowed. She had two children. They were both getting ready for college. And got to know this family very well. And she used to tell me about how much she was looking forward to the kids leaving for college and how she was planning to backpack across Europe. And she had always wanted to go to Tibet. And when the holidays approached, the children surprised her with a new puppy. Her face fell.
So that tied her down.
Mm-hmm. Suddenly, because they were thinking, oh, poor mom, we're going to leave her alone and we need to give her company, when in fact she was excited about the prospect of having an empty nest. So the bottom line there is, before you even consider gifting a puppy, If you're gifting for an adult, don't be afraid to ruin a potential surprise. Have an honest chat with that person. See whether it's something that would fit into their lifestyle. Very important.
I wouldn't be very happy if somebody suddenly presented me with a puppy.
No. And the same with kitties.
Same with
kitties.
I mean,
it's not just dogs. And Adele, what do you want to say?
No, absolutely. I agree there with Dr. Kupke. In my experience over 22 years, I've seen that there are many, many cases, probably more so than not, where an animal, a kitten or a puppy, even an adult dog, might have been gifted to an individual, whether without them knowing or with very little knowledge of what they actually needed, mm-hmm. if indeed they were even in a market for a pet. And oftentimes that pet ends up being bounced around from one house to the other, creating a bunch of different issues, including separation anxiety. And other times that pet is kept in the household out of pity in a way, and unfortunately not given the right care, perhaps as a person that's constantly working or has a family or has school and what have you, and then they don't have time for the pet, but yet they don't have the heart to try to find this pet another home. And in either situation, the animal suffers. So it's always better that gifts of animals are not handles such as property. Like, oh, we're going to go buy a radio, and if you don't like that radio, we just go to the store and return it.
Mm-hmm.
It's really important that gifts of animals are done with people's knowledge, consent, and that the people that are actually going to be the ones caring for that animal are involved in the process of choosing the animal.
So that would include fish, fowl, rodents, reptiles, that you just don't give people gifts of a pet.
You know, as Adele touched upon, you know, you really need to look at whether this pet is even appropriate for the person receiving the gift, you know, because what you're actually giving the person is an errand. You're giving the person something that needs to be looked after. Pet ownership requires time, energy, and commitment, and especially when you're looking at giving a puppy to children. Do children understand that the pet's a responsibility?
Yeah, they can really wear them out.
Well, are they ready? Are the parents ready to pick up the slack when the child doesn't do all that is required?
Pick up anything else?
Mm-hmm. Exactly, you know?
Well, we're going to get much more into this issue and also addressing the issue of adoption versus purchase of a pet. When we get back, we need to take a short break. We're speaking with Dr. Ian Kupke of Sable Chase Animal Clinic in Kendall and Adele Mieres of Canine Advisors. Stay with us. We'll come back. We do have lots of calls now, and we'll get to them.
How much is that dog?
Can I tell the story of this?
Let it run a little bit.
Yeah, but I just all weekend I had an earworm of this song, thinking this is what we should play on Monday. And I came in this morning, I said to Joe, we need to put
Patty Page
on singing. How much? He said it's already in the system. Yeah. He already had done it.
That's funny. He won't be lonesome. And the doggy will have a good home.
How much is that doggy in the window? The one I think Adele is singing harmony here.
How much is that dog? Okay, now, before we talk about adoption versus buying, even though this is part of it, you say at no cost. If you decide even to buy a dog, you need to get a reputable breeder and never go into a pet store and buy an animal. Is that correct? Okay, tell us why.
Well, really, that does segue on to where to get a pet. First of all, a lot of people want purebreds. What's not universally understood is 25% of dogs in shelters are purebreds.
Mm-hmm.
So, in a sense, you're giving an unwanted dog or cat a home. You're doing a good deed. You're giving that poor animal a break. A lot of pets, great pets, are euthanized in shelters. The main reasoning behind going for a breeder rather than a pet store, what I would tell folks is, You want to know where this puppy came from. You want to know who the parents are. Finding out who the parents are helps understand what the dog that you're buying or cat that you're buying is going to be like as an adult. Dogs more so because you're looking at size, you're looking at temperament.
Health issues.
A responsible breeder will do a lot of health screening for going back to what we were talking about with congenital diseases with and breed specific problems in insurance. If you're with a reputable breeder, the parents will be screened for that. And so what you'll actually end up with is a puppy that is pre-screened for a lot of the things that would cause problems later on. And what they often say is that money spent at the time of purchase equals money saved later on at the veterinarian. So literally, by getting your pet pre-screened, large breed dogs should have OFA hip assessments done. There is an eye exam called CERF, which some breeds need to be screened for retinal issues, blindness later on, and so on and so on and so on. The big issue I have with pet stores, you don't know where these pups are coming from, and you don't know anything about their history or anything about their genetics. And of course, pet stores can be a situation where a lot of disease is mixed because you're getting animals from different sources mm-hmm. in a stressful environment. Even the very best puppy stores cannot equal the care that will be given to a proper certified breeder. Now, quick word about breeders too. There's breeders and breeders. What I'm talking about is AKC registered breeders, responsible professional breeders who know what they're doing with a breed, are registered, they're licensed, and they have a reputation to protect. I'm not talking about neighbor A decides to breed puppy with neighbor B. That's what we call backyard breeders, which in mm-hmm. fact, you might be breeding relatives. You might be breeding bad genetics into the breed. Generally, non-professional persons should not be breeding dogs. It's just more trouble than it's worth. At the very least, you're going to end up spending more money than you're going to make and possibly doing the breed a disservice. It's always best to just let people who know what they're doing breed the pets and support them, because that's really the best place to get a pet from.
We're at your service this hour.
So we have calls, right?
Yes, that's where I was going.
Oh, okay.
This is Elizabeth in Coconut Grove. Hey there.
Hey, good morning. Thank you for taking my call. One of the concerns that I have is toxicity with toys. I had a golden retriever. I've had actually four, and two of them have had cancer, so I completely agree with the breeding process. There's a big study actually right now that 50% of goldens are getting cancer. She went through chemo. She's doing great. She's only five. And so I'm looking for toys that are non-toxic and not made in China, and I have a very difficult time. And I was wondering if you had any ideas or anything that you can think of that you could recommend that would be helpful.
At your local supermarket, at the butcher shop, they have marrow bones.
Okay.
And that's something that dogs love. The marrow is really good for them. And it's likely not made in China. But okay. that's, you know, that's an idea. And I feel you completely, because most of the toys and even items that you see in a pet store say made in China. And a lot of them may be toxic. I know for years I've used some Nyla Bone toys for a very hard-biting dog that I have, as well as Kong toys.
Are Nyla Bones okay?
And that's worked out fine for me with a number of different dogs over the years. I've never done any toxicology studies on it, so I can't say that they haven't. Yeah, I can't say that they don't have any specific toxins in them, but I can tell you that I've used them, and I haven't had an issue with them. Some of the Nyla Bone toys that I would use are the ones that are more flat, the hard rubber ones, and not every dog likes those hard rubber ones. I would say things that are softer that the dogs can eat, even if it passes through them. A lot of times, some of the acids in the stomach and intestines may actually break down some of the chemicals in the plastic. So I would say try to get toys that the dogs can't actually chew parts off of them. And if you have a toy that the dog has chewed so much that it's now too small and the dog may actually ingest it, get rid of it and just get them another one.
Oh, that's a really good point.
And I guess we could take this opportunity to mention that with Christmas trees coming and Christmas ornaments and all the toxic things there are during the holiday season.
Tinsel.
Yeah.
Tinsel in particular. Tinsel can be a huge problem with cats. I would basically say just don't tinsel your tree if you have a pet, because it ends up being a linear foreign body that needs emergency surgery.
Gets wrapped in the intestine?
Yeah.
Okay.
So it's not worth it.
Okay.
And we'll move along. This is Pat. Excuse me. Deerfield Beach.
Yes. Quick question, and then maybe if there's time, another question. What can you do if a cat has been determined to have behavioral issues, not health issues, and starts going to the bathroom, defecating on beds? What can you do? I do some rescue myself, and I found a home for a cat, and something changed in the house, and he started to defecate on the bed, and of course I wound up with the cat back again. But what can I tell people to do to stop? We had the cat looked at physically. There was nothing wrong. What can you do to stop that immediately so that people won't just give up and give the cat back or give it away?
I just have a question before the expert's answer. When you got the cat back, did it still defecate on the bed?
It hasn't so far, no.
Interesting. Okay.
That's great, Bonnie. That was a question I have for her.
Oh, sorry about that.
No, I'm glad you asked. It's certainly a behavior issue. You said something changed in the house. I'm not sure what changed in that household. But generally, the cats would do that in a form of marking. A lot of times, they'll do it more with pee than they will with poop on the bed. So some of the things to look at are some of the other factors. What's making the cat do that? Generally, it's another cat. Oftentimes, for example, there's two females in the household. It's very common that one of the females, especially the female that has been there before, starts doing that, or the one that may show more dominance. So there's a lot of different factors to deal with there to actually be able to resolve the issue. Immediately, I would say don't give the cat the access to that, to that bedroom, let's say, in particular. Mm-hmm. Some of the things that you also want to do is take the poop, or if there was pee in an area that the cat has placed on the bed, and put that where it's supposed to go, back in the kitty litter, and then take the cat and actually place them there so they sniff it there. That's a real basic thing to just begin doing. But to actually resolve the behavior issue, we need to know a little bit more about this particular case.
This is the highlight of my career.
Okay.
Related to that same issue, the only thing that I know of that changed in the household was that this was a male cat. He went to a house that was just catless. And they allowed him to sleep in the bed with them when they first started. And then after a couple of weeks, I guess because he would walk on their heads and wake them up, they decided to close the door.
Oh, well, no wonder.
It was immediately following that the problem happened with the defecation. Could they be related issues?
It very well could be related issue, actually. Initially, there's better ways of dealing with the cat coming up on their head and waking them up. A lot of the issues that our cats and dogs have, we actually create in them. So they gave the cat comes into their household, they feel, oh my God, I want to give this cat everything that is me. And essentially they gave the cat too much freedom too quickly. And then they have to go ahead and try to take some of that freedom back gradually. They don't want to make the abrupt changes like that, because they're going to end up with abrupt results from the cat that they do not want.
Which they did.
Right.
We have an emailer. Can you clarify Miami-Dade County, Florida laws specific to pit bulls, either purebred or any percentage of pit bull in a dog? Also clarify and describe the various type of pit bull breeds.
Yes. In Miami-Dade County, the law is Ordinance 8922, started in 1989. Basically, it's very gray. They specifically say three breeds: the American Pit Bull Terrier, the American Staffordshire Terrier, and the American Bull Staffordshire Terrier. The Bull Staffordshire Terrier and the Staffordshire Terrier have very little to nothing to do with a pit bull, but per Miami-Dade County, what they say is that if the dog conforms, that's the word that they use, if the dog conforms under their standards, then the dog is considered a pit bull. Now, I have been involved in a number of cases, Miami-Dade County, and they only allow three people to testify as to whether the dog is a pit bull or not. A Miami-Dade County animal official or an animal officer, a veterinarian, or an animal behaviorist. So I, as an animal behaviorist, have been involved in a number of cases. And what we had seen is originally they had something like an 18-point list, which means if your dog met the majority of the points in the 18 points, then your dog was considered a dog that conforms. That's whether your dog had any pit bull or Amstaff or bull Amstaff in them. Because of several cases that we won based on that list, they revised that list. Now it's a 30-something points in that list to be able to find more little nitpicking points. Even with that list, we brought in several cases, hard proof such as blood DNA that showed that a particular dog was not a pit bull, and yet they said it still conforms and we will not accept DNA, because one of the asinine things that Miami-Dade County does with their law is they give you the right to a hearing, because legally you have the right to a hearing, but the hearing that they give you is not a real court hearing. It is what's called an administrative hearing, which is held over the in the building where water and sewer is, with a little fold-out table. And unfortunately, they do not follow standard court procedures. This is something that should be fixed within Miami-Dade County.
Okay.
Let's take another call. Excuse me. Peggy in Key Largo. Hi.
Hi. I'm glad you finally got to my call. I have had a problem with my 3-year-old dog with her inner paws in between her toes. She's a swimming dog. She's kind of a snoodle-type rescue dog. But it's gotten so bad this year that we finally took her to the vet. We were able to cure it ourselves before by using kind of like an alcohol vinegar mixture to keep the paws drier. But I was surprised. The vet told me that it's a myth that there is a coral dust allergy on dogs, which everyone down here has told me coral dust is terrible on their paws. And we've been having road work done in our neighborhood to put the new sewer in, and so the walking every day is on this marl or coral dust. Mm-hmm. And her feet have just, you know, turned into little, you know, red, inflamed. You know, we had to use steroids
right.
and all this stuff to heal them. So does the doctor think that there is a coral dust allergy?
Well, did the steroids make the condition improve?
Oh, immediately, yes.
Okay, so there you have it, proof that it's whatever is causing it, it's most definitely an allergy, because steroids will make the signs associated with an allergy temporarily go away. Mm-hmm. I can tell you that I used to live in Key Largo, and the inhalant allergy I have to coral dust is out of control, one of the reasons why I don't live there anymore. And one of the rules we find with canine dermatology is that whatever makes you and I sneeze can cause skin problems. So I wouldn't dismiss the possibility of it being a coral dust allergy. It's hard to say whether that's the only problem, but what I can say is it does sound like it's a hypersensitivity, an allergy to some combination of things related to the ground. And definitely that should be worked up. And it certainly could be managed. You just need to identify what it is and basically remove the cause, or consider there's a process called hyposensitization where we reduce the sensitivity to that material.
Okay.
All right.
Immediately, excuse me, just a second. We had a situation with a very allergic pit bull in Fort Lauderdale. Was actually allergic to grass. And one of the things that we did was make it fun for her to wear booties. And after she wore booties, her paws did not swell up anymore. So they actually sell booties, like, whether online or at Bass Pro Shops for dogs. And if you make it fun for your dog to put on the booties and associate the walks with the booties, perhaps the dog can wear these booties and help in the process.
What kind of shop?
Bass Pro Shops.
Bass?
Yeah, Bass Pro Shops. It's a big store for hunters.
Oh.
And a lot of the hunting
dogs. No wonder I don't know.
A lot of the hunting dogs have to wear boots. And so that might help protect your dog at least while you go through the veterinary treatment with him.
Okay. And the number we're going to get to you, 1-800-743-9576. 1-800-743-9576 or WLRN radio. Radio at WLRN.org.
Okay. We move along to Sherry. She's in Delray Beach. Hi.
Hello. I would like to know, how does one find a qualified animal behaviorist and trainer in Broward County, say? My brother lives in Pompano Beach, and he recently adopted two Weimaraners from a shelter. One male, 7 years old, well-adjusted, used to live with a little old lady who could no longer care for, but the other one has had two previous owners and has been abused and exhibits, the dog needs training. I visited my brother and sister-in-law a week after they adopted the dogs, and we couldn't eat in the house because the dogs, well, especially the dog that has been abused, was jumping up, even up to the height of where you're holding a plate above your head. And I just wondered, I think my brother needs training as well.
Yeah, I was going to say.
He won't swear at the dog, but he'll say something derogatory instead of a command, I know that that's wrong, and
let's get an answer.
Is he willing to get a behaviorist?
Yes.
Okay, Adele?
Yes, hi. These are situations that we deal with almost, definitely weekly. More than likely, this is just a dog that hasn't had a whole lot of structure, and he's had some abusive past. So especially when the adopters know that the dogs have had an abusive past, they tend to want to just give this dog all the love in the world and no structure or very little structure that is needed. And then you got a little monster in your hands. Doesn't sound like he's a bad dog at all.
Not at all.
Yeah, it really doesn't sound like it. We've dealt actually with some Weimaraners that are severely aggressive dogs, and we rehabilitate any and all dogs. To answer your question, how to find a good trainer or behaviorist, I have a few questions that you can ask, including references, right there on my website. I believe it's on the bottom of the first page of the homepage.
Now, I was trying to grab a pen when you gave your website address out. Would you mind repeating it?
It's canineadvisors.com.
Oh,
okay. Letter K, number 9, advisors.com.
And Adele, your email is Adele@
E-D-E-L.
E-D-E-L.
At K9, letter K, number 9, advisors.com. I can definitely show your brother a completely different dog within 90 minutes.
Oh, wow, that would be wonderful. And where are you located?
I live in Hollywood, but we work from South Palm Beach to South Miami-Dade.
Oh, okay. But I can find all that information out by emailing you.
Sure.
Okay, wonderful. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, good luck.
Thanks.
We'll move along to Adam.
Yes.
In Miami. Hi.
Hey, how you doing? I have a question about the food, pet food industry, and what is quality. Where can I find quality food for my pet? Because I have a cat, for instance, and dry food. And the stuff in food, they say they have low carbohydrates, high protein, because they're carnivorous. But I was wondering if maybe making a home meal for the kids, or what would be safe and good, beneficial.
Well, I would say the best place to start really would be to...
For references.
Pardon me?
Or references of where to find.
Yeah, the best place to start really would be to get your pet's veterinarian involved in this, because there are a number of nutritional alternatives depending on whether your pet is normal weight, too thin, a little on the heavy side. There's diets specific for nutritional needs. There are things that you try to avoid, such as you cannot make a cat a vegetarian. For example, cats have an obligate nutritional requirement for certain trace amino acids, such as taurine, that they need to develop properly. Really, that's the best place to start, because most veterinarians are trained in nutrition, and they can point you down the right direction without necessarily physically selling you something.
Let me just add a little something to this. As a general rule, your local supermarket does not have good pet food. Just as a general rule, yeah. Your Publix, Winn-Dixie, your local supermarkets do not have good. Now, Whole Foods does have a few good pet foods, but you know, you pay for that too. And a few things you want to look for: no byproducts, so go straight to the ingredients. Don't look at the bag, don't look at how pretty all the meat and everything is, the fish and everything that they show in the front. Flip that bag around, go straight to the ingredients. You want a solid protein as your first ingredient. Your first 3 to 5 ingredients of the pet food are going to make up 95 to 99% of the entire content of that food. So you want to make sure you have a solid protein up front. You want to make sure there's no BHA or BHT that's used as a preservative. It's been known to cause cancer. You want to make sure that there is no byproducts, as I said, as well as no gluten and no corn or soy.
Oh my goodness. That's a whole list. Do you have that on your website?
I have some of it on my website, yes.
Okay.
Under pet nutrition.
Okay.
Let's
take a break, or an email?
Take a break.
Okay, a break. It's At Your Service with Dr. Ian Kupke of Sable Chase Animal Clinic and Adele Mieres of Canine Advisors. We'll come back and take more of your calls. And welcome back to today's At Your Service Pet Edition of Topical Currents. Joseph Cooper, Bonnie Berman, Dr. Ian Kupke, Sable Chase Animal Clinic, Adele Mieres of Canine Advisors, and you. And we're going to take your calls. We want to address a couple of things, but we're going to ask you to just be patient so we can... it just might take us a little bit of time to get to you. So, Dr. Kupke, you were saying about choosing the animal that's right for you when we were discussing the Weimaraners.
Well, going on from the whole concept of pets as presents, you have to consider, first of all, whether you want an adult or a puppy. And there's benefits and drawbacks to both. If you're going to rescue, you're going to find a lot more adults available. The bad news about getting adult is you miss out on the puppy kitten stage, but the good news is you miss out on the puppy kitten stage.
Which takes a lot more work, a lot more money.
A lot more work, a lot more money, and
a lot more time.
A lot more time.
And maybe housebroken.
Housebreaking. There's, you know, a lot of people say, oh, I don't want to adopt an adult because you're going to have problems and so on. But ask anybody who's raised a puppy and you'll see a whole different host of problems. And there's no guarantee that puppy's not
chewed up shoes.
Chewed up shoes.
Chewed up tables.
Dropping their potty business all over the place. You really have to ask yourself if you want to go through that, if you have the time to go through that. The other side of the coin is temperament and drive. The nice lady was calling about the brother's 2 Weimaraners. It's late. It's closing the barn door after the horse has bolted at this point, but I'm not necessarily sure I would have recommended a Weimaraner for that particular family situation. It's a high-drive dog, needs a lot of work. If you live in a one-bedroom studio in Brickell, I wouldn't recommend an Irish Setter. If you work 12 to 14 hours a day, I'm not sure you should be having a dog at all. Maybe get a kitty instead. Assess whether the lifestyle that you have is going to fit the breed that you're looking for. You're not going for the breed of the lifestyle you wish you had. You should get a breed for the lifestyle
or what's popular or what's pretty.
Exactly.
Or what's...
Exactly. You know, if your life's dream is to do agility, don't get a dachshund. If your life's dream is to jog 3 miles a day with your dog, don't get a bulldog or a pug. If you want a dog that's just going to sit and look pretty, well, then you don't want a high-drive Malinois. You really need to critically look at what it is you really is going to fit into your lifestyle.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why so many dogs are surrendered, is not because they're bad dogs, but they were just not a wise choice given where you are in your life at the moment.
And let's take another call. Linda in Hollywood. Hey, Linda.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. Mm-hmm. You there?
Yes. We're here.
Oh, okay, good. So quiet. I have two multi-foods. One is a year old, and the other is like 2.5. And they're both fully housebroken, and life is going grand with the two dogs. My husband and I are thinking of taking a road trip this summer. That would probably be like maybe about 3 weeks. And we'll be traveling from relative to relative and just being able to see people. We were thinking about taking the dogs, and mm-hmm. I just didn't know if we're setting them up for a miserable time or if that would be a good thing to do.
Well, if you're RVing it, are you RVing it or are you driving?
We're driving. It's okay. Not an RV. I have a car that's a hatchback, so there's like a good amount of space in the back that
no
we
worries.
Could put a dog carrier back there that they would be safe in.
They're little dogs. I would say make sure that they are fully vaccinated. If you're going north, make sure your dogs have a Lyme disease booster on board. We don't generally vaccinate against Lyme disease down here in Miami-Dade,
okay.
but north okay. of Palm Beach, you absolutely need a Lyme disease vaccine. Make sure all their vaccines are current. Make sure they're on heartworm preventative.
And, yeah, they are. All that stuff we take care of.
You know, make sure they're microchipped, so if, God forbid, they get out, whoever finds them can scan them, get a number to reach you, and okay. make sure you don't lose your pets. In my experience, dogs love being with their owners wherever they are. Make sure that they have bring lots of their own food with you. Make sure that you stop frequently for potty breaks.
Right.
And I would finally say make sure your flea and tick preventative is absolutely perfect, because up north there's a lot more ticks available, especially in wooded areas.
Okay.
Good enough. Thank
All right,
you very much.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Okay, we have an emailer, Maddie in Boca. Let me see if I can just sum this up, because I feel so badly for her. She had a son. She has two 12-year-old miniature Malteses, or Maltese, whatever the plural is. And for 12 years, they've used puddle pads successfully. Now she moved into a new home to accommodate the baby, and they pee and poop everywhere. One of the dogs tears up the puddle pads. She tried taking them out more, and they still come in and pee and poop everywhere. She's torn between her love for the pets and need for a clean, safe environment for her growing baby. And her partner's pressuring her to abandon or put them down, but her heart can't let them go, and it's causing her a lot of stress and strain. Any suggestions?
Yes. Take the partner to the local shelter and adopt the partner out. I'm kidding. Basically, just real quick suggestion so that both partners are happy. Get a playpen for the dogs, and don't give the dogs a full run of the house.
She said she's tried to kennel them when she's home or away, but they bark nonstop and have accidents in the kennel.
That's why. You want to get a playpen,
okay,
which is larger than a kennel, might be an area that's something like 4 foot square. And in that playpen area, you set up one area for them to go to the bathroom. A really good item that I know they only sell at Bed Bath & Beyond. It's basically a tray that has a fake grass, and the dog can pee on there, and it goes down to a tray that they can clean out. The dogs tend to like to go there. The smaller dogs may need the shorter fake grass, but essentially it'll give the dogs an option to go there. That is not something that the dog's going to be able to tear up as they can tear up a pee pad.
Okay.
And it'll give them an option. If the playpen is small enough, there's a bed on one side, some toys in an area, and that pee area on one...
Well, she has two Malteses.
The two should stay together.
Okay.
So that it reduces anxiety. If they're kept in a cage separately, it's going to get them to bark more. If they can stay in there, especially if they need them to stay for a longer period of time, they can take a little Kong, smear some peanut butter, and freeze it the night before. And then we're going to leave, when they're leaving for a longer period of time, they can leave that down for the dogs to get busy on it for a while instead of staying there bored and then barking all day.
Okay. Maddie, I hope that helps, and I hope it works out with your son and your Malteses.
Okay, we're short on time. Another call. This is Marvin in Pembroke Pines. Hi.
Yes, I have a Boston Terrier that I adopted about a month ago, and unfortunately I gave him full rein of the house, and I can't seem to get him to stay in one room without getting upset. And that one room is where he sleeps and spends most of the day. Do you have any suggestion on what I can do?
Are you trying to keep him in the one room while you're still in the house or when you're
leaving
the
house? No, just when we leave, and for 2-3 hours at a time.
All right, so that's part of the problem. You try to keep them in the one room, and then the dog knows that you're going to be leaving when you try to keep them in the one room. So initially, the very first suggestion is you want to identify some triggers that are happening for this dog. Dogs learn through a process of association of patterns. So this dog has associated that whenever he hears keys or whenever he sees somebody pick up a purse or a pocketbook or put on shoes, somebody's likely going out the house and they're getting left in there. So a couple things. First of all, desensitize them from those triggers. Pick up the keys or the pocketbooks and don't necessarily leave the house, but rather go to another room, drop them off, pick them up again, go to a different room like that, so that you start desensitizing the dog from that trigger. And then also, if you want to leave the dog in that room and leave the house, leave them in the room, but don't leave the house. Put them in the room with like a baby gate, stay within vision, and then go back in. You would go out for about a minute or two within vision of the dog, and then you go back in. Once you start seeing the dog a little bit more comfortable, then you go out of vision for only a few seconds at a time, and then you come back, go back in, pet the dog. You want to do this a number of times till you start seeing that you can start going out of vision for more than just a few seconds, and the dog is okay, does not start the whining. The process involves a little bit more, but at least this will get you started.
Well, we have so many calls and emails. We're really sorry that we couldn't get to all of them.
Just kind of run out of time.
Yeah, it seems to go so quickly. Dr. Ian Kupke, Sable Chase Animal Clinic, give us your email again and your contact information.
Ian Kupke, our phone number is 305-595-1450, and you can reach us email at sablechasevet, sablechasevet@gmail.com.
And that's in Kendall, right?
Yes.
In Kendall. Adele, your contact information.
It's canineadvisors.com, and the office is 954-923-3440. My personal number is 786-419-3647. You can also reach me at edel@canineadvisors.com.
And we'll have a lot of those links on our website. Thank you so much, and we apologize to the callers and emailers we couldn't get to. We'll send your emails, by the way, to the doctor and Adele.
Apologies to those callers we couldn't get on the air. Our producer is Richard Ive, technical supervision by online producer Paul Leary. We have free audio archives and downloads at our website, WLRN.org, and more information at the Topical Currents Facebook page. Tomorrow's program traces the paths of the family of David Laskin. His book is The Family, Three Journeys into the Heart of the 20th Century. And to the calendar, on this day in 1835, 178 years ago, the birth of Steel King Andrew Carnegie in Scotland. The chief force behind U.S. Steel, he was also noted for immense philanthropy. By today's standards, his fortune was a mere $293 billion, the second richest man in history. John Dee was first. And on this day in 1914, 99 years ago, the birth of Yankee Hall of Famer Joe DiMaggio in the California Bay Area. The only player in baseball history to be an All-Star each year of his career. One more on this day in 1963, 49 years ago, John F. Kennedy is interred at Arlington National Cemetery 3 days after his assassination. 1 million people lined the procession route. So we leave with a thought from JFK, only the second president laid to rest at Arlington. Taft also, quote, "The great enemy of the truth is very often not the lie, deliberate, contrived, and dishonest, but the myth, persistent, persuasive, and unrealistic. Belief in myths allow the comfort of opinion without the discomfort of thought." Joseph Cooper, Bonnie Berman. Next, it's Here and Now from NPR News.